Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. Well, of course, the new year is upon us, and one of the top financial resolutions for 2015, according to a survey by Fidelity, is to save more money. All of us want to save more money. Experts say that making changes in money management is actually easier than losing weight or dropping a habit like tobacco. So we have that going for us, but it still seems mighty challenging to employ the kind of habits in our spending that will help us save money and have less debt in the coming year. Well, lucky for us, my guest today knows all about implementing habits that will make for a lifetime of financial freedom and be good stewards of what God has given us. Rachel Cruz grew up with a front row seat listening to her father, Dave Ramsey, one of the most trusted names in money and business. And she's written a book that she co-authored with her father called Smart Money, Smart Kids, and it addresses how parents can help instill values and money habits in their children that will set them up for success. But also, she also addresses college students or potential college students who will have to learn to manage their own finances in order to graduate with a big degree and not with big debt. So for the first half hour, I'm going to chat with Rachel about some tips for parents and students as well. But for the second half hour, we get to listen in on Rachel addressing students at the University of Northwestern St. Paul on how to manage their financial lives. So let me introduce you to her and we'll get the conversation started. Rachel Cruz is a seasoned communicator and presenter who's been speaking to groups as large as 10,000 for more than a decade. The daughter of Dave Ramsey, she uses the knowledge and experiences from growing up in the Ramsey household to educate America's students and young adults on the proper ways to handle money and stay out of debt. Her book, Smart Money, Smart Kids, co-authored with her dad, released in April of 2014, and it debuted number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. You can follow Rachel on Twitter, and you can also check out her Facebook page. We'll have both of that on our show page at myfaithradio.com. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it just seemed so appropriate as we start this new year. And like I mentioned, a lot of people have financial goals to save more money. And of course, sometimes they think that means that they have to make more money too, but that's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, it's not always the case. I mean, obviously, any extra income will help in any situation.
Sure.
But for the most part, yeah, you can take the income that you have coming in and actually be intentional with it. It's amazing how many people don't live on a budget and they're not intentional with their money and they have debt payments, you know, coming out of their ears, and it's hard to gain traction financially. And so a lot of people's goal is to either, you know, get out of debt or just to save more money like you were talking about. So a lot of people are in that boat right now with the New Year's resolution still kicking in.
Right. Well, as I read your book, I know one of the myths that people have in their head is, well, I'll start giving to fill in the blank, whether it's church or a charity or a school or whatever it is that their heart wants to give to. I'll start giving when I make more money. And you indeed say that that shouldn't be your goal, that you should start giving now, and that may actually help you in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, giving is a crucial part of your financial walk, if you will. And I think a lot of people don't harp on this, but I think it's just really important. I think whether you're looking at it through a Christian lens or not, this idea of living with an open hand and realizing that there's other people in the world besides yourself, that just, and you're giving away money in that process, like it just makes your perspective realize that, okay, there are other people in the world. And what that ends up doing is it makes you selfless instead of selfish. And so it's easy to be selfish with your money because, you know, you have bills to pay, you have a family to take care of. But as you start giving, and it just can be a small portion of your income, it doesn't have to be half of it or anything like that. But as you're giving, you're becoming selfless. And selfless people, I believe, just have a better life. You're more grateful. You're more thankful. And it's just you become a more attractive person in life in general when you are giving and you are serving. And it is so true, like you said, some people think, well, okay, well, if I could just make $10,000 more, or if I could just, you know, if my income was double, I would be able to give. But that finish line, it keeps moving. And it almost can be harder to give the more money you make when it hasn't been a habit in your life. And I love John D. Rockefeller. He has a quote where he said, I never would have been able to tithe the first $1 million I ever made if I didn't tithe my first salary, which was $1.50 a week.
Mm.
And I love that he started out even with $1.50 a week, and he was giving, and that was, he was able then to give throughout his wealth because it was a habit that was part of who he was. So it's important to start where you are, no matter where you are, that you need to be giving.
Well, and your book really addresses that you can get started when you are a child and you implement some great strategies for parents to employ with their own families, because starting off as a child, you do learn the value of work and also the value of how to tithe. Tell me how that worked in your household and why that's so important to you.
Well, Mom and Dad, they made us give a portion of what we earned. So growing up in the Ramsey house, we were on commission, not allowance. We were never just handed money, so we had to work for money. But each week we would get paid on the chores that we did, and we had to divide it up in three categories. We had to give first, save second, and we could spend third. And that giving envelope, you know, we would take to church with us. And I'm telling you, even at, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, as we took our money that we worked for, and you, and as a little child, you know, you give that away at somewhere, you know, for us it was church, you know, we let go of that dollar bill each week. And we did that week after week, month after month, year after year. Your heart changes, and it's an amazing thing. And parents, you know, kind of are reluctant sometimes, like, well, if my child doesn't want to give, I won't make them give. And the way I look at it, though, is, you know, you make your child brush their teeth. You make your child study for school. You make your child do these things, these disciplines in life, so that when they're an adult, they can be successful. And part of that is giving. And so, yes, I would say make your child give. And it may be just an action at the beginning, but as they do it over and over and over, it becomes a part of who they are. And I'm telling you, I think kids who are giving are grateful kids.
Mm.
And that's an attractive quality to have in your children, you know, ones that are grateful. And so I think a lot of so many great characteristics stem out of the subject of giving.
I remember the first time that my son is 12 now, and a couple of years ago, he asked me if he could, instead of giving each week to church, if he could save that money and then give it at the end, and so that it felt bigger. And they were doing this big campaign. He knew that they did this big campaign at the end of each year, and he wanted to just put a bunch of money in there. And I said, that would be fine. And I cannot tell you just the sense of accomplishment that he had bringing that money in. And then he got a note from the youth director, and he was just so glowing, and I've kept that for his scrapbook. But it just showed the power of what it means to, I made this money, I saved this money, I'm going to give this money, and to know where that went. Because they, of course, had all these, you know, $12 will pay for this, and $50 will pay for this. And so he felt that same sort of accomplishment, and it made a big difference for him. And I think sometimes we forget as individuals that if it's $5 a week or $20 a week, that it's still what we are giving, and it amounts to a great deal of money at the end of a month or the end of the year.
Absolutely. And for him, I mean, what a memory that he has. Not only did he have a goal he was shooting for, which is great, but as he left that, you know, as he let that money leave his hand, I mean, that's an incredible thing. And to be able to experience that, and bravo to you, Mom, you know, to encourage that in him, because most parents, you know, may not step in that side of their child's life, but when you can encourage that, I mean, your kids, I don't think we give them enough credit sometimes, but it is amazing what happens in the heart as they are giving and they are serving.
Well, and you also do devote a nice section to, you know, spending isn't a bad thing, and that's a reward that we have for saving our money as well. Talk a little bit about that, and, you know, how sometimes we're reluctant to pick up a money book because we're like, oh, it's going to teach us to save and give. But that spending is not this thing to be dreaded, that it's actually part of saving money as well.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Spending money is not a bad thing. I think people have sometimes just put the whole concept of money in general in some kind of evil, bad file folder in their minds. They're like, no, that's bad. You know, if I buy something nice, that's evil and that's bad. That's materialistic. But it's so about your heart, because money is amoral. Money doesn't have morals. It's not good and it's not bad. But how you use it can be good or bad. And if you're diligent and you've worked hard and you have money saved and you're able to go and spend it, whether it's a great vacation with the kids or it's maybe a new purse, mom, that you've been eyeing at the store that you finally have the cash to pay for it, you know, those kinds of things, that is okay. Those are blessings that you're able to go and you're able to enjoy your money. But when it's done irresponsibly or you're spending money that's not yours and it's the bank's, that's where things get stressed out. That's where you feel the tension, and that's where you're not able to enjoy your stuff as much. So that's where I really do encourage people to spend with cash, and sometimes you have to save up if it's a larger purchase. But part of this whole money management is to enjoy your money. And one thing my husband and I do we do a budget every month, and we each have a personal category in our budget. So I have a certain amount of money each month that goes to me that I'm able to use, whether I go, you know, get my nails done or get my hair cut or make my Target runs, where it seems like that's the black hole of life. You know, when you walk in, you can spend so much money. But I have money allocated just for me to go and to be able to enjoy and to spend. And there's freedom in that, too. And so you're able to enjoy your hard work, but you want to be responsible with it. And I think that's the key.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about debt. And of course, your book focuses a great deal on that. And you talk about debt as just being this jail that you have to live on if you decide that that's the way that you're going to purchase things. Talk about why it's so essential to eliminate debt from our lives if possible.
Well, I believe what Scripture says when it comes to money. And in Proverbs, it says that the borrower is slave to the lender. And I think that's such a powerful word picture for us, that when you borrow money, you become a slave, financially speaking. Some people would say emotionally speaking. I mean, there's a lot of burdens that come with debt, that you become a slave to whoever lended that to you. And so what's hard is that we've become a generation and a culture wrapped up essentially in financial bondage because we've wanted things that we can't afford. And that's why, you know, it's hard to give, it's hard to save for a lot of people because they have car payments and student loan payments and credit card debt, and they're living way beyond their means. And honestly, it's not worth it. And so a part of my hope is for people to become debt-free and to eliminate their debt. And we teach people to do that by just simply listing your debts, smallest to largest, regardless of the interest rate. Pay minimal payments on everything, but you attack that smallest debt first. And so you go through that. So you go from your smallest debt to your largest debt, and you pay it off. And we're finding that the average family is doing that in about 24 months, everything but their mortgage. And so it's an amazing thing when you can taste this idea of freedom, that you don't owe anyone anything. It's such a great place to be financially, not only mathematically, but I think emotionally and spiritually as well. And also teaching your kids about money. The book, Dad and I wrote Smart Money, Smart Kids. We talk a lot about this, of raising your kids in a household where they understand that if they don't have the money, they can't buy it. And it sounds right. It's such like common sense, right? When you hear that, it's like, well, duh. But it's so hard to live in that, and then the culture they're being raised in. And so drilling that in their minds early on so that maybe they don't have to make the mistakes that possibly you've made as a parent when it comes to money and debt.
Well, I'm so grateful to my dad. He got me a checkbook when I know that's kind of a foreign word now, but I'm dating myself. When I was in fifth grade, he got me a checkbook for my savings account and taught me what it meant and how to subtract money. And, you know, there I had a savings and a checking account. And so how to move money around. And it really taught me the value of exactly what you just said. I don't buy anything until I have the money. And if I'm going to spend money on that thing, then it better be very important to me, because then it goes away and you no longer have that money available. So you talk about an envelope system, and I know a lot of people are familiar with yours and your dad's work, but quickly explain the envelope system as far as your kids go, because it does seem like a wonderful way to teach them. We use it in our home as well, of what it means to save, spend, and give.
Yes, well, the envelope system, you know, it started with adults first and foremost. So you take your budget, you know, the different categories in your life that you spend money on a regular basis, like food, clothes, you know, it could be gas, it could be anything that you spend money on, and cash out those categories and put them in separate envelopes. So when you go to the grocery store, you go out to eat, you take your food envelope, and you just spend out of that. And then when you realize that the money's gone, you can't go out to eat. You have to go home and eat, you know, until you get your next paycheck. And so it just kind of keeps a boundary on your money. And so that's the adult version of the envelope system. But for the kids, you had to have three basic envelopes and just write in Sharpie. It could be a bank envelope, nothing fancy, but just write give, save, and spend. So they have these three envelopes. And when they get paid, possibly for chores around the house or, you know, maybe it's birthday money, whatever you as a parent decide to do, when they get money in, that they have to divide their money up into three categories. And the dollar or the percentage, that can be up to you as the parent. You know, this isn't too rule-stricken or legalistic. You know, mm-hmm. You can kind of figure out a formula for yourself. But to make sure that they're doing all three things, and that way they're learning to give. They have that money set aside to give, like we talked about earlier. They have money that they're saving for. And their savings goals are going to look different. When they're five, maybe they're saving up for a Lego set or a Barbie, you know, something small that they can, that's tangible in a few weeks. But if they're 14, maybe that save envelope is for their car at 16, you know, so the savings goals will change, but they have money allocated to save. But then also they have a spend envelope. And the spend envelope, again, is for them to enjoy the money that they've earned. And this can kind of be, there's a lot of teachable moments probably in the spend envelope. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think parents out there, and you may be the same, where your kids are very different. They're either natural givers or I'm sorry, they're natural spenders or savers.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I was always a natural spender. So my spend envelope was always empty. I mean, whether, you know, I was at the grocery store with my mom and I'd pull out that dollar and I would just buy gum at the cash register. I mean, I would just constantly be spending money. I never had money in that spend envelope because it would be gone. But I learned over time, okay, you know, I'm spending all this money so quickly. Maybe I should, you know, set some of it aside a little bit and kind of, you know, think through my purchases a little bit more. Mom and Dad kind of helped me with that. So it just gives your kids all these teachable moments in the three main areas of money: give, save, and spend.
Well, Rachel, just loving the wisdom that you're giving us today. And we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about college, a very large area that we will need to both save and spend for, and talk about students. So if you have a student who's going to college this coming fall, or maybe you've got a sophomore in college and you want to start planning, which Rachel, I'm guessing, would say, yay, then we're going to talk a little bit about college coming up and what we might need to do in order to not go into debt, sending our kids to university. So we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I have the opportunity and honor of talking with Rachel Cruz today. She's written a great book, co-authored with her dad, called Smart Money, Smart Kids, Raising the Next Generation to Win with Money. And we've been talking a little bit about our young kids and what we can do to kind of get them started on the right foot to learn how to save, how to spend, and how to give, and also the freedom that exists when we are debt-free, or at least as close to debt-free as we can get. But as we come to that subject of college, it just seems overwhelming to know that the average college student loan debt for graduates of a four-year college or university is over $26,000. And when I got my first job out of college, I didn't even make that much in a year. So how are students coping with this? And Rachel, can they avoid it?
Well, they're coping with it as best as they can, I guess. I mean, it's tough. Yeah, when you graduate and you have, you know, on average almost $30,000 in debt for this degree, and that's just the student loan. I mean, that's not credit card debt that you possibly racked up while in school or car loan that you've just taken out. I mean, simply just the student loan payment. And so it can be very overwhelming. And I think that's what's hard, is I talk to so many students, you know, who have just graduated, or even students that have graduated and they're in the working world, but they've been there for 3 years and they're just now realizing the financial hit that they took by taking out a student loan. And usually it's too late. And that's what's hard, is I want to try to catch people on the front end if possible. So if parents are listening, you know, to know that before your student goes to school, that they can go to school debt-free. And there's multiple ways to do that. Everything from staying in-state, taking in-state tuition, going to a community college even for the first year or two, scholarships and grants. This is free money. So much free money goes unused every year for college education. So get out there, find those scholarships and grants. And then also working. getting a job. I know it's kind of a shock, you know. Some people may have just driven off the road when I said yes, work while in school. But this is still a possible thing, an option that they have. And research has shown us that if the average college student just works 20 hours a week, which is a lot, but they work 20 hours a week, they can pay their way through an in-state school. And so a lot of it comes down to just the discipline of finding money for school, scholarships and grants, the discipline of choosing a school maybe that's not, you know, the coolest looking school in the world or the most exciting, but it's a school that you can afford. And so, and I think so those, some of those disciplines in life will really help you as a parent send your child debt-free, but also for them to carry some of that as well, that weight possibly, and to be able to get through school debt-free.
Well, in your book, you address each of those things you just mentioned much more in detail. And if you're listening, you say, I want to learn a little bit more about that. Well, Rachel and her publisher have been gracious enough to provide several copies for us here at Faith Radio. And if that's something you're interested in, go to our webpage, just submit, click on Connecting Faith, submit your name, and we will enter you into a drawing to get a copy of this great book, Smart Money, Smart Kids. But in the meantime, the tips that she's giving, of course, she has more information about that on her website as well, and we'll have a link to that on our show page as well. So, Rachel, we have time for probably one or two more questions. One of the things you mentioned is that parents need to participate in this process and not be passive in this whole decision-making of where to go to college and how our children are going to fund it. And I love that. I think it was a part that your dad wrote about, we raise our kids and, you know, we help them with all these decisions, and then all of a sudden they get to making the biggest decision up until this point in their life. And we're like, yeah, you choose whatever you want. And that can really get us into trouble. Talk a little bit more about that and how parents really need to be engaged and help their kids through this.
Yes, I would encourage parents out there, be in this process. I mean, your child, they're 18. They're not always very smart at 18. You know what I mean? Like they're just 18 and they don't know what they're doing all the time. And a lot of these 18-year-olds are signing their lives away, financially speaking, because a parent doesn't step in and say, that's not a wise choice. It's not wise to go to the school because we don't have the money for it. And so stepping in, and I really see parents like, this is your responsibility. And you're not being a control freak. You're not being a helicopter parent. You're not being any of those. You're being a very loving, guiding parent by helping your child see what is going to be wise for them in the future and what the reality is. Because the reality is, your degree is a degree. I mean, most employers don't care where you got your degree from. Some want to see that you have a four-year degree. So college, you know, some would say is still very important. And I would agree with that. I think college it is worth it. But I think it's worth it in the sense that you can pay for it and you're smart about the education choice you're choosing. So parents out there, yes, get involved. Help them see this and really guide them through this process. Do not just, you know, pull your hands back and say, well, you're 18, you get to decide. No, still guide them and still love them well in this area.
Mm-hmm. Well, great advice from Rachel Cruz, who's written a fabulous book called Smart Money, Smart Kids with her father, Dave Ramsey. They have just a wealth of information in this book. Again, if you'd like a copy of that, go to our website and click on Connecting Faith and you can submit your name and contact information that way. Hopefully you'll win a copy of this. But please listen in on the next half hour where you get to hear more great wisdom and tips from Rachel as she talks to our students at Northwestern at a chapel session. And she's talking about being good stewards of God in every part of our life and how to overcome the roadblocks to that. So we're going to check in with her just after the break. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us for this half hour. I so appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. And we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. If you're just joining us, I've spent the last half hour talking with Rachel Cruz, who's co-authored a book with her father, Dave Ramsey, called Smart Money, Smart Kids. We talked about some great ways to get your kids started on money habits that will make for a life of successful stewardship, stewards of what God has given them. So now listen in as Rachel gives wisdom to our college students at University of Northwestern St. Paul on how to avoid the roadblocks to financial freedom. Listen in.
It's really good to be back with you guys. This topic of money and this topic of stewardship is really my passion in life. This is what I love to talk about. But when it comes to the topic of just stewardship in general, I feel like most of us are very confused. Because especially for our generation, when you've heard this word stewardship, it's usually been in a church setting or a Christian setting. But what's interesting is this word steward is not even a Christian term. Back when the Bible was being translated in 1611, this was during like the Braveheart days. Okay, so like think of like Mel Gibson, right? Like the face painted and going to go kill people with the sword, right? Remember that? The movie. So picture that movie, and that was about during the time when scripture was being translated. And so back then, the way the land was divided was within realms. Okay, so a realm back then was kind of a two-county area. So picture two counties in your mind, put them together. That's about the size of a realm. And of course, there was a big castle on the realm where the lord of the realm lived. And the guy that lived in the second nicest house was called the steward. And the steward managed the land for the lord. Okay, so the steward did everything from the banking, the food, the trade, the peasants. I mean, everything that went on in this realm, the steward managed. He didn't own it. He was just the manager. And so when scripture was being translated, they saw that us as believers believe that God owns it all. And you and I are just the managers. We are just managing what God has given us. Everything from your future spouse to your degree, to your schooling, to your job, to when you buy a house. I mean, every part of your life, including your money, is all God's. But you and I just manage it. Okay, I'm going to need two volunteers. The number one fear in America is public speaking. The second biggest fear is when the public speaker calls on you. So I'll ask for volunteers. Just two guys. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. Really quick. I won't. Yeah. You in the hat. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. Give these guys a round of applause. Thank you. Okay. What is your name?
Matt Frost.
That's appropriate. Matt. Okay. And what's your name?
Jason.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Jason, do you have a job?
Yep.
Okay, very cool. Okay, so you know, as a working man, that it takes a long time to save up $1,000, doesn't it? That's a long time. I mean, you work hours beyond hours, you pay taxes, you drive to work, you maybe deal with a jerky boss. I mean, you do a lot to save up $1,000.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. Yep. Yeah. I was going to say, watch him. Yeah. You stay right here. We're at a Christian university. Jesus is here among us. So you just stay right there. Okay. So normally in life, when you save up money, you go deposit it in a bank, right? Which is very normal. And so Jason.
Matt.
Okay. So Matt is going to be our banker in this example. Okay. And so I know it's been fun, Jason, but you're going to deposit your money into Matt's bank. Deposit it, yes. Okay. And so, you know, it's we'll say it's spring break, okay, and all your friends are like, hey, you know, we're gonna just go big or go home in spring break. So we're just gonna go down, you know, we're gonna go to Mexico. We're just like gonna take a huge trip, a bunch of friends, and we're just gonna fly down and we're just gonna go and enjoy a nice like Caribbean spring break, like pretty crazy, pretty wild. That's not normal, right? But it's expensive. And you're like, you know, I can do that because I have $1,000 that I have saved. So you go down to the bank, you drive through the little drive through, and you do the little tube thing with the slip of money and all that. And you see the teller in the window and she's like, oh, Jason, listen, Matt actually needs to see you in his office. And you're like, well, who's Matt? Well, he owns the bank, and so he really needs to see you in his office. Do you mind coming in? And you're like, well, that's strange. Sure. So you park your car, walk into the bank, you walk into Matt's office, and Matt's like, oh, hey, Jason. Listen, we got to talk. Have a seat. Listen, Jason, my iPhone really needed an upgrade. And when I got there, the iPad was like talking to me to buy. And so I had to go buy the iPad. And then, you know, I had to have the iPod. The whole family had to be together. And so I just bought a bunch of Mac products that I needed. I really needed some stuff. And I took your money and bought me some stuff. Is that okay? Okay, Jason, you're like a holy man going to a Christian college sitting close to the front row in chapel. Okay, so you're like a really good guy. But I would be mad. Okay, I would be probably getting up, probably yelling at this point, like, you took my money. You stole my money. And Matt's like, listen, when I get out of jail, I'll pay you back. It's okay. It's okay. And it's like, well, no, it's not okay. I worked hard. I did these things. And you, I gave you my money. And you just took, you stole my money. So what if we switch the names and that this doesn't really represent you and I? And this doesn't really represent a banker. This represents you and I. And this represents God. You see, God owns it all. And you and I are just the managers. So for the rest of this morning and tomorrow morning, that is something that we have to take from our head to our hearts and really walk in a level of maturity spiritually to get to this place where we know we are just the managers. Okay, thank you guys so much. You guys can give them a round of applause. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So if we really believe that and we say, okay, God, everything we have in our money is yours. What do you want us to do with it? And I'm so thankful that he gave us this handy dandy book called His Word that has scriptures beyond scriptures. I mean, hundreds of scriptures. There's actually more scriptures on money than heaven and hell and love combined. This talks more about money than all of those topics combined. And that's crazy to me. And I think, you know, when scripture was being written, I think God knew that we were going to really struggle in this area of our lives. So he gave us a lot of direction. So if we believe, okay, God, you own it all, what do you want us to do with it? We have to open this up and see, what does God say about handling money? We're living with our money in America today, it's a disaster. I'll just be honest. I mean, you look at just the statistics, 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. 7 out of 10. The average college student is graduating with $35,000 total in debt. The savings rate is like -1 in America. And 2.3% of evangelicals tithe. Less than 3% of believers are giving to the church on a regular basis. And I look at that, I'm like, that is not how we're supposed to be. That shouldn't be the stats. But unfortunately, they are. And so I think that there are roadblocks that keep us from being great stewards. So we're going to walk through those four. We're going to walk through 2 this morning and 2 tomorrow. So the very first roadblock when it comes to being a good steward that keeps us from being a good steward is we do not have a plan. We do not have a plan. We just kind of wander through life, maybe month to month. And, you know, if you work, you realize this, you know, you file your taxes in April and you're like, oh, wow, you know, I made some pretty decent money. Where did it all go? And it's unfortunate because people will live that their entire life. And then they wake up at 65 years old and they're like, well, I hope the government, who's well known for its ability to handle money, is going to take care of me. And that's what happens. I mean, we just float through life. And what scripture says, it says, know the state of your flocks and your herds. Know what you have. In Luke, it says, don't build a tower without first counting the cost, lest you get halfway up and you're unable to finish. And all those around you begin to mock you and say, this man tried to build a tower but was unable to finish. Here's another Christian who can't pay their bills. Here's someone else who can't even get through the month without depending on a credit card because they don't have enough money to finish the month. Have a plan. Before you build a tower, sit down and count the costs. So you have to have a plan. And when you have a plan with your money, basically what that means is that means you are being proactive. You are happening to your money. So many people just lay back and just let their money happen to them their entire life, and everything is dictated by what their money does to them, versus turning around and saying, no, I'm going to tell my money what to do in the name of being a good steward and saying, I want to be intentional with where it's going. And people in life in general, I believe proactive people are more successful in everything. When you happen to your life, when you happen to opportunities, when you happen to your relationships and your friendships, when you happen to things, they become more successful than just sitting back and hoping everything's just going to work out. So happening to your money, so being on that plan, which means that plan is a dreaded word, the B word, a budget. Gross, I know. But a budget is great because John Maxwell has a great quote, which I love. He said, a budget is simply telling your money where to go instead of wondering where it went. And that happened to all of us. You get money in and you look up 2 weeks later and you're like, where did it all go? I have no clue where that money went. So being able to tell your money what to do. Now, a budget, if you've never done a budget before, it may sound intimidating. It may sound confusing. It may sound complicated, but it's not. I promise. One of my New Year's resolutions this year was to work out. Okay. And not like hardcore workout, but like walk on a treadmill. Like, you know, my heart is a muscle. I learned that recently. And I'm like, oh, that probably needs to be stronger in life, right? I just like want to take care of myself. And so one of my friends is a personal trainer. And so I asked her just last week, I was like, hey, will you meet me at the gym? Because I want to like, you know, I don't know. I just want to be healthier. I want to walk and like lift heavy things, right? And like maybe like get some of this. Like, you know, I just want to be in better shape. And she's like, well, sure. Well, I'll meet you at the gym. So we met last week, and at one point we were on the floor on those like mats doing crunches, right? Like she was showing me different ways to do crunches. And about 5 minutes through, I was like, oh my gosh, Lee, I was like, my back is killing me. Like my lower back, it's like, there's a sharp pain. Like it just hurts. And I even had to like sit up. I was like, oh my gosh, it just hurts. And she was like, well, that's so strange. She was like, well, try this. And we tried something else. I'm like, no, it literally hurts. I have to stop doing these crunches because my back. She's like, well, that's strange. I mean, but Rachel, when you flex your stomach, is there a sharp pain when you flex your stomach? And I was like, I don't understand what you just asked me. Flexing my stomach? She's like, yeah, when you flex your stomach. I was like, yeah, I really don't even know what that means. I don't know what flexing your stomach means. She was like, oh my gosh, Rachel, like if I was going to like punch you in the stomach, what would your stomach do? I'm like, well, it would tighten up. She's like, yeah, that's flexing your stomach. I was like, oh, that's neat. She was like, yeah. That's what you do when you're doing crunches. You need to flex your stomach. And I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't doing that. I was just like flopping on the floor or something. I don't know. And so something that seemed so kind of intimidating and confusing to me actually was very, very simple once I learned how to do it. And so that is what a budget is. It's actually very simple once you learn how to do it, but it's hard to do. Right? Just like working out. It's hard for me to get up in the morning before work and do that. I mean, it's hard to do that, but you need to do it. And so that's how a budget's going to be. So a budget, very, very simple, you guys, is this. You're going to get out a sheet of paper before the month begins. So it's about to be February. So before February begins, get out a sheet of paper and write down at the top the amount of money that you have coming in for the month. So that's either through scholarships, if your parents give you money, if you have a part-time job, whatever it is, figure out how much you're going to make in February. And I know you guys, you know, are college students and everything's kind of here or there, but just guesstimate, if you will. I hate that word, but it's the best word to use. Guess and estimate, okay? Just try to figure out what you are going to have in February. So you put that at the top. And then you're going to list out all of your expenses. Everything you spend money on that you're in charge of. Now, if your parents pay for, you know, your cell phone. You don't have to count that on your budget. This is stuff that you literally pay for. So this could be clothes, food, textbooks, if you have to pay for car insurance or gas, whatever you have to pay for, list it out. And then put dollar amounts next to each of those categories. And so the goal is to take your income minus your expenses should equal zero. So every dollar coming in has a name. And that's called a zero-based budget. And that's the most efficient way to budget. So before the month begins, you're already telling your paycheck what it's going to do when it comes in. And that way you are in control. That is being extremely proactive. Now, a budget and this whole concept, this is the most boring part of money to me. This is why we're doing this first. Because for a lot of people, either you're a nerd, kind of, and in a very respectful way, but you enjoy, like hearing the budget. You're like, oh my gosh, this is great. I already know what I have. Everything's calculated in my head. This is great. You know, I'm always on time on things. It's chapel, and so I'm going to be here a little bit early, and everything's going to be perfect. I have this, and my underwear drawer is folded, and everything in life. I just love Excel, and everything is just perfect in my life, because I enjoy that, right? And so that's my husband, for instance, who's over here on the front row. He's wired more that way, more detailed. How many of you are nerds? Just be proud. It's okay. Yes, you're more detailed. Yes. They're just so precise, always, the nerds. But then you have the opposite of that, which is the free spirit, right? And we were born, you know, we were a party looking for a place to happen. We enjoy people. Details stress us out. The fact of being on a budget sounds restraining. It sounds like that means we can have no fun. If you're on a budget, that means you have no life. I don't want to be on a budget. I just want to be free from that. And just give me some fun. We'll work out the details later. Everything's going to be okay. How many of you are free spirits like me? Woohoo! Yes, they always do like a wave through the auditorium. So, nerds. A budget is going to be easier for you because, again, you enjoy. That's how God's wired you. You enjoy the details of your life. But free spirits, I want to challenge you to still do a budget. And you may think, Rachel, I'm in college. That is so stupid. I do not need to do a budget. I barely have any money anyways to begin with. But I promise, when you can start to learn to be intentional with your money, it's going to become a habit in your life. And so when you graduate college and you get a job, this is part of what you do as being a good steward. You take it seriously, and this is just what you do. And when you get married, you know, you do a budget together with your spouse. You agree on where your money goes. Sadly, the number one cause in North America today is money fights and money problems. But doing a budget together helps resolve a lot of those issues. And so what you're doing is you're just building a really strong foundation in your life, even as a college student, where this becomes part of who you are and what you do. And so if I can do this, a spender, a free spirit, if I can do it, I promise you can. But here's the deal. You want to take 90 days for a trial period. So for 90 days, the first 3 months, it's going to be a little hectic. Because if you've never done a budget, you have no clue what you spent on gas. You have no clue what you spent on food. You just don't know. And so give yourself those 3 months to adjust your budget within the month. You know, if you lower one category, up another. And so really working on it. And after 3 months, your budget should start working. And so, again, being intentional with your money. And I believe that is part of really being a good steward, that you're living on a plan. Now, something you can do even a step beyond the budget, which is what I do in life. It's like the best financial tool I've ever experienced. And that's a really extreme statement, but it's kind of true, is the envelope system. Okay, so in your budget, take categories that you tend to overspend on. And for probably everyone in this room, it's probably going to be food, right? We all love food, and we spend money on food all the time, right? So food is a great one to do. Girls, if you have a clothing little line in your budget, cash out for clothes. You know, if you go to Target and spend $25 every time you walk in, no matter what you're wanting to buy, have an envelope for that. And so each line item on your budget that you tend to overspend on, take an envelope and literally just write the category across the top. And then when the month begins and you say, okay, this is how much I'm going to have for food, go cash it out. And you put the cash in the envelope. And when you go to the grocery store, if you live in an apartment, are you guys mostly in dorms? Yeah, okay. Well, then this is for later in life. Or you go out to eat, wherever it is you're buying food, you take your food envelope. Your food envelope does not go to the mall with you. Your food envelope does not go to the movies. Your food envelope does not go to the gas station. Your food envelope goes when you buy food. So when you buy food, you take money out of the food envelope. You don't buy any money with food out of the food envelope. This is all you buy with the food envelope is money out of the food envelope. That's all. And so what this does is two things for you. Number one, it gives you accountability. Because when you look in your food envelope, and again, the first 90 days, be a little lenient, figure out what you need. But after 90 days, you know how much you spend on food each month. And then when you look, and it's January 27th, almost the end of the month, but you look in your food envelope and there's no more money in food and all your friends are going out to eat, you can either beg them to go to a Mexican restaurant and eat free chips and salsa and drink a water, or you have to learn a word that is politically incorrect. No one says it anymore. I feel like parents don't even say it to their kids. I mean, this word is being completely taken away from our vocabulary. But it's a word you have to learn in every area of your life, and especially the area of money. And the word is no. It's very difficult, actually. What you do is you put your tongue on the roof of your mouth, and you kind of blow out, and you say, no, 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 I'm not going to go shopping the rest of this month because my clothing envelope is empty. No, I can't go out to eat with all of my friends because I don't have money in my food envelope. And when you can learn this word no, and especially in the area of money, I promise your life will be so much more fulfilled, because people that are just yes people all the time, yes, 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 it gets them in trouble. And so learning no is a discipline, but it's a great one to learn. And second, what the food envelope or the envelope system does is you're using cash. And cash is emotional. You feel cash. Carnegie Mellon did a study and showed that if you actually spend with cash, they did an MRI on the brain. And when you spend with cash versus a credit card versus plastic, you actually spend less. Because your brain, when you pay with cash, registers pain. The pain points on your brain light up when you spend with cash, because you feel it, because there's an exchange happening, right? I give you money, I get food, or I give you money, I get clothes, whatever it is. There's an exchange versus just swiping all the time. Just yeah, 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 yeah. And I mean, like, you know, just think, gentlemen, you know, it's almost Valentine's Day and you decide to take your lovely girl out to a very nice dinner. And so you go down the street and you have one of those really nice dinners. And the bill comes, and you look at the bill, and you're like, oh, wow, Uncle Benjamin, it's been really fun. And I love you so much, Uncle Benjamin, but you're going to have to leave now. Because she's worth it, and it's a great dinner, but Uncle Benjamin, you're part of the family, and now you're not anymore, and I'm sorry. And you put it in that little black tray, Uncle Benjamin's coffin, and he just leaves. He's gone forever. But that's what happens with us. You feel cash. So you're actually going to spend less when you spend with cash. So the envelope system is a great tool to use, and especially with you guys in college, because it keeps you accountable and you actually spend less. So being a good steward is being on a plan. Now, the second roadblock quickly that keeps us from being good stewards is we don't save money. We don't save money. In fact, America has like a negative savings rate, right? I mean, like, we do not save money. In Proverbs, it says, in the house of the wise, there are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. Wise people save money, but a foolish man devours all he has. And this is not a good fool. Okay. This is not like, what's up, fool? What's up, fool? What's up? What's up, fool? Fool, fool. No. This is a biblical fool. This is not a good person. This is not a smart person. A foolish man spends everything he makes. So you have to be saving money. So when it goes back to your budget, you guys, on your budget, this is where you have to be intentional about saving.
Thanks so much to Rachel for helping us learn about good financial stewardship. If you missed part of the program, you can listen to a podcast of the show by going to myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith, and we'll have that up for you in just a few moments. And if you're looking for a copy of Rachel's book, we have a few to give away. You can, again, go to our show page and click your name in, and we will submit that for a drawing to get one of Rachel's awesome books. Thanks again for joining us on Connecting Faith.